USDA releases a June surprise. The corn dropped and the beans rallied, but it may be the wheat market that leads futures lower across the CBOT floor in the coming weeks. We'll ask that question and many more today on Commodity Week.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oilseeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Tom Fritz of EFG in Chicago. Our panelists today are Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois, Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois, and Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Did you even think about the move in the wheat market prior to the opening of trade on Friday morning? And we'll start with you, Bill Mayer.
Did I even think about the wheat prices?
Well, yep, what the wheat move would be looking like on that day.
Well, I mean, I think the early calls there were for higher on the wheat, and I think that there was a lot of talk early on there about whether if wheat was up and the beans were higher as everybody expected they would be, whether we could see corn, how far down we could see corn go, and it actually opened pretty steady. I think the wheat is entering the harvest, and we've had a good move here. We've probably slowed some demand, and I guess I'm a little bit negative on the wheat right now.
Matt Bennett?
I would agree. I think, you know, the bearish numbers that came out today were with the corn, and we're talking limit higher move on beans on the open and 10 to 20 on wheat, and then it varied on the corn. And I guess I'm like Bill. I think coming into harvest here and the way that demand slowed down a little bit with wheat, it's hard to imagine since we've been making new highs lately that we had bullish enough numbers to take us on up.
No, I can't say that I really thought wheat was going to do what it did today, because everybody talked about the bean acres and the corn acres, and the report was basically negative or neutral to wheat. So the wheat was really kind of a surprise in the move it made.
Here's the numbers from the wheat pit as they finished on a Friday. July, they had a high of 633.75. That was a contract high, and a low at 580.5. Their settlement price was 582. They were down 10.25 from last week. December futures at 2 cents lower, finished at 610.5. December wheat, a big outside down on the dailies. The same happened in the July. This is why I talked a little bit about that wheat market. And I want to know if that 633.75, which is also the monthly lead option high, might be a spike in the market and finish it off. Has anybody paid enough attention to that one to have an idea? That's what I thought.
I would think that the likelihood of that is pretty good here. I think that we probably have to go down the road quite a ways before we see new highs, but I'll say, you know, along with everything, nothing's going to surprise me in this market as we move forward.
All right, so let's move on to the corn market for the day, and I know you have a lot to say about that one. July corn, a 367.75 top, low at 323.25. Their settlement price at 329.5. They were down 28 cents from last week. December at 350.75, down 29.75 from last week. We'll cover the beans as well. July an 878.5 high, Low at 7.93 and 3 quarters for the week. Their settlement price 53 cents higher at $8.50. November's at 8.81 and 3 quarters. We're up 51. Now, the USDA, of course, releasing numbers on Friday morning. Corn planted area, for all purposes, estimated at 92.9 million acres. That's up 19% from last year, 14% from the year before. Farmers increased corn plantings 3% from their March intentions, resulting in the highest planted area since 1944, when 95.5 million acres were put in the ground. And maybe more importantly than that, the highest harvested acreage, I believe at 85.4, since 1933. What'd you think of the markets and the trade after those big numbers came out this morning, Bill?
Well, the beans did about as expected. I mean, that was a big drop, one of the largest, I think the largest drop we've ever seen as far as acres go from the March intentions to the June number. Corn, I guess I thought, put in a pretty stellar performance with as negative as the numbers were that came out. And we were talking a little bit here before the show. I think what you really have to do is step back and look at this corn acreage number, and what does it really say? What it says is you give the producer the price levels in the spring that we had this spring, and they will produce enough corn to meet demand, and that's really where we're at. So if you kind of step back and look at it from a macro standpoint, I think it's really pretty bullish to the ethanol industry, and that we can really see that take off in the long term. Short term, there's some big numbers. I mean, you're looking at some big carryout numbers. I'll let the other guys talk about some of that.
You missed. You mentioned the numbers from the soybeans and the planted acreage, by the way, at 64.1 million acres. That's down about 15% from last year's record high. The area harvested 63.3. That's also down 15% from last year. It's the lowest planted acreage and harvested acreage area since 1995. About 3 million bushels lower than the planting intentions, or 3 million acres lower than the planting intentions report that came out in March on the beans, and I think we put 2.4 million on the corn. So let's talk about the bean market just a bit. You're at 80% in your corn, aren't you, Matt, on your farm?
Yeah, I am, I have to admit. You know, it's quite interesting. Drop it down to 64. Open it up the limit. We didn't hold limit. You know, I read a couple of different things this morning that we could lock limit and stay limit all day, and then, you know, even tack quite a bit more on next week. I think the 64, as you said, you know, it's lowest we've had since, what did you say, 95?
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, you're drawing corn acres from several different places. Obviously, some of them came from bean acres. You know, whenever I look at the bean market, I'm in no hurry to price anything, just basically because, we can swing the pendulum in the bean market very quickly. You know, our usage is still good, and you know we've been thinking we're going to have a gigantic carryout, but what are we going to have with this many less acres? If we have any type of weather problem in August, which some people are still calling for, you could see the bean market really catch fire.
Mike, let's talk a little bit about what the charts actually look like for the week. The beans on the daily, November, pretty impressive, a move higher. They took back all last week's losses. That's saying quite a bit because when was the last time we had a 50-cent down week and a 50-cent up week back-to-back in the beans? And then on the corn, if you look at that one, there's an outside down month in the lead option charts with the last high at 437 and a quarter in February and 428 and 3 quarters in the month of June. What do you make of all of those technical sorts of things that have been happening in the marketplace?
Well, I think the corn took a lot back before this report, and that's why people thought they might find some support here, even with the big acreage number. But I don't think the bulls on the corn have really, you know, run to the side, because the same thing with August makes beans, July makes corn. And if there's a weatherman comes out next week and says, hey, we're going to be hot and dry for the next 6 to 10 days, I think corn's going to find some support. And ethanol demand is good. The hog report today was basically bearish to hogs, but actually made it bullish to corn, because we got more hogs to consume our huge supply here. And beans is the same thing. I mean, we're definitely going to probably look to be competitors with China on the Brazil front if we don't produce the beans we need. So the price is helping the Brazilian or the South American farmer want to produce more beans, which in the end will help the whole world stock situation.
And since you mentioned the Hogs and Pigs report on all hogs and pigs on June 1 at 102, kept for breeding at 101, kept for marketing at 102. We'll pick those numbers up from the Mercantile Exchange and then come back to the Chicago Board of Trade. Live cattle this week in 87.95, top in the June, the low at 85.05. Their settlement down 230 at 85.50. August contract for the feeders at 111.55. They were up 3.15. Lean hogs, July at 74.40 on the high, the low at 70.85. Settlement down 2.80 at 71.22.5 in the July. And the bellies at 92.40 were down 30. So we've got a lot of numbers that we're trying to discuss and talk about. But I guess most importantly, if you take the long-term view of what happened on Friday with the USDA reports, you've got a drop in the corn market. And that may very well have a pretty decent silver lining in it, mightn't it?
Yeah, and that's what I was alluding to a little bit before. I think that if you're an ethanol producer out here tonight, you've got to be looking, you know, just kind of licking your lips and saying, boy, let's keep the capacity up. We've got good margins here again. And I think that is the long-term look. Bullish outlook on the ethanol side. Now bring in the index funds where, you know, as they came into this market, that's what they were looking at, was this big demand increase as we went through the next 5 to 10 years. And, you know, are they ready to come back in here and maybe buy some more corn? I don't know. I think that on the December corn, that 340 level is really pretty critical. That's kind of a retracement level. We had some lows back there clear back late last fall, and I think it's pretty critical that 340 holds. But I think long term you could really say that this is a positive in the corn market. But as I've said before, you don't want to get forced into making sales at lower prices.
Yeah, what do you do if you're going to be forced into making sales? How are you going to cover yourself? Does it matter too much if you're forced into making sales, given probably coverage in the crop insurance side?
Well,
I know it does.
I think it could in the fall, the harvest market, with some weak basis levels in that part of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I've been advocating buying puts all along, letting the cash run. You know, at this point, if you didn't get a lot of cash sold, you know, I don't want to be forced into making sales either. What I've been trying to kind of talk to my guys about is, if you bought crop insurance, which hopefully you did with what it threw at you this year, but, you know, take your spring price times your coverage level, and mine was 85%, and that price comes out to 346. So really anything above it I viewed as a fairly decent sale if I was expecting an average crop. Well, in my neck of the woods, we didn't figure that we were going to have even an average crop until the market basically went quite a bit lower. I mean, we paid for it a little bit before it rained. It was getting to be dire straits. So it was a little more complicated for some of us that didn't get the rain a little sooner. But I certainly wouldn't make any hasty sales, because I feel like this market's going to come back to you at some point because the demand is so solid. Exports have still been good. We're running ahead of schedule. Like you guys are talking about, the export or the ethanol market, yeah, the margins are great, and they're not going to go away at this point. I mean, this is the best thing for ethanol expansion we could ask for.
Well, I think that's right. I don't think you're really have to be pushed into making a sale this year as long as you've got your insurance coverage, because you are covered at higher prices here. And it's the same thing. The thing that I worry about is what Bill said, is come harvest time, you know, with this huge crop we're going to have, what's the basis going to be? And I think the most important thing is if you got to get your storage lined up right now. If you haven't done it, you know, you could be forced to make sales at this 70-cent basis again and just have to do it over nothing. So I think most importantly, you got to make sure you got your stuff sold or at least covered to a storage facility so you can hang on till and not be forced to sell it.
All of the fireworks, of course, were in the numbers for acreage, but we did have a quarterly grain stocks report that came out. Corn stocks were down 19% from last year at 3.53 billion bushels. Soybeans stored in all positions totaled 1.09 billion bushels, and I kind of want you to come back on this one a little bit because that's a really big number. In fact, let's see, that is a record number for the month of June. You think soybeans can absorb all of that?
Well, you know, to look at what the market did today, Todd, I think it just shows us it is a futures market. We are encouraging the South American farmer. We have a fair amount of beans on hand, but like Mike said, July makes corn, August makes beans. With less acres of beans, the pendulum can swing so quickly. I don't know that we can absorb that all right away, but the fact of the matter is if we have anything less than a good crop, then worldwide the bean scenario is going to tighten up.
I mean, what a quandary we have here on the soybeans because we've got so many beans on hand right now. Basis levels are just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And the market's really saying we don't want these beans now. We don't really want them till next summer. So from a marketing standpoint, I think your job is to try to figure out how you get to next summer with them without having a lot of price risks.
For example,
some put options next summer or something like that maybe.
Do you think that this is something that's going to be recurring and that farmers are going to have to learn how to handle and maybe the market in the U.S. is going to have to handle because you end up at this point with a North America, South America. We've got a six-month rotation on soybeans, but suddenly you have a North America, South America corn-soybean rotation and the ratio. And we talked about this with Daryl Good just a bit. The ratio has to change from one marketing half of the marketing year to the other. One encourages corn, one encourages soybeans. So farmers on the other end in the United States, do they have to figure out how to manage that ratio and how to carry things into the next marketing year more efficiently, do you think?
Well, I think that's going to depend upon the year, but I think that's why you typically have a faster comeback on the soybean market right after harvest than you do on the corn, and I think that's because of the South American situation. Now, the past year, we didn't have that.
Anything else to add before we go?
I think that's right. I think it's the most important thing probably is going to watch is your basises because that's what's going to be the factor in your six-month movement is do they want it now or do they want it later?
In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Tom Fritz of EFG.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. In the course of 1 week, most of Illinois went from well below normal June rainfall to normal and above, alleviating fears of an even longer period of dry weather and putting an end to thoughts of drought, except perhaps in far southern Illinois. Waves of showers and thunderstorms moved across Illinois this week, leaving behind 2 to 4 inches of rain across most portions of central Illinois. Northwestern Illinois did not receive a lot of rain, but that area had more than enough last week to last them for a while. Southern Illinois came up short early in the week, but a slow-moving front sagging south through Illinois on Thursday finally helped produce some significant rain across many of Illinois' southern counties. Only a handful of far southeastern Illinois counties are in moderate drought in the latest U.S. Drought Monitor. Temperatures were only slightly warmer than normal this week, largely due to the cloudiness and rain. The first week of July should be dry and pleasant through most of the 4th. A cold front dropping south may set off some scattered showers and thunderstorms beginning late on the 4th of July or on Thursday. Cooler weather should follow for the northern two-thirds of Illinois, but the front may stall out over southern Illinois, keeping the chances for rain alive through the next weekend. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week on WILL Urbana. If you get the opportunity, make sure you hit our website at willag.org. You have until this evening, Saturday evening at midnight, to pledge your financial support for our coming, we won't call it our marketing year, but our coming fiscal year. Everything's got to be in the bank by then. We sure would appreciate your help. Go to willag.org and hit pledge at the top of the page. Our guest this week is Tom Fritz, and our panelists are Mike Georgie, Bill Mayer, and Matt Bennett. Tom Fritz, of course, has been a commodity futures business person for the last 36 years. He followed in the footsteps of his father and his two older brothers, and he started as a runner and worked his way up. In 92, Tom co-founded EFG. It's a commodity trading and service firm located in Chicago. Thanks for joining us, Tom.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me how you viewed the numbers as they came out this morning.
I think the corn market's over for a while, but that doesn't mean we're going to have some rallies as we move through pollination. Soybeans, I was surprised at the low acre number, but I also know we have to do something to entice the Southern Hemisphere to expand their bean acres this coming season. And as far as the wheat market goes, you could have put any number out there and was fully ready for the reversal in wheat.
I would like to, I guess the question, a key question I think is, what kind of a yield number do you plug in here when you got 93 million acres of corn? Have you guys done any work on that, Tom, or looked at, you know, what are you plugging in?
Well, right now, you know, I asked everybody this morning, what do you want to use as a yield? And they say, well, you're going to use a yield today of anywhere from, say, maybe 150 to 153, and that's just based on current conditions. But, you know, it's like you folks said earlier in the show, we still have pollination ahead of us. And, you know, that can change. I don't think crop conditions are long for this level, as meaning how good they are. I think on Monday afternoon we're going to see crop conditions on a national level fully steady, because I think you saw the West have a little bit of deterioration this week because it was so dry. But I think as we move through the summer, you're going to see your crop conditions tail off a little bit. But it's a great question. What are we going to use for a yield? This morning I used a 150 yield based on everybody that I polled. And if we use the same demand numbers that the USDA gave us, you got a carryout next year of $1.3 billion. We don't have a reason for higher prices with that.
Kind of going along with that, my argument all along, Tom, has been, you know, where's all the extra acres coming from? We know it's coming from corn on corn here in the heart of the Midwest, but there's also a lot of fringe areas that don't normally have the, you know, the ability to make more money producing corn than they do something else, which tells me, yield-wise, I don't see, with the push in acreage, a very good likelihood of trend yield unless we have superior weather. So going along with that, I guess my thinking all along has been that I would probably take whatever I would, you know, if the trade's thinking 150, I'd probably take three or four off of that if you're talking average weather. So I guess going along with that, do you think that in the long run that the fringe areas and the increase in corn on corn will cut into the yield? What's your guys thinking on that?
Initially, we thought the fringe areas would weigh on yield, and that there would be no way that we could get a 153 yield. But right now, some of your fringe areas are doing awfully well. But once again, you know, we've got the next 4 to 5 weeks ahead of us that is really, you know, the make it or break it time for corn. So we're just going to have to, you know, sit by and watch to see how that materializes. As an example, I went on to weather.com today, got a 10-day forecast for Des Moines, Iowa. There's barely a drop of rain in that forecast.
Yeah. Switching over the beans, you know, of course we've got, you know, we talked about too, we've got a lot of beans sitting around. We've got basis numbers as high as 90 some cents under. How high can these beans go before we see buying from South America?
When you say buying from South America, you mean where we're going to expand acres?
Well, end users buying beans from South America rather than from U.S. farmers.
I got you. Well, right now I've got a target on November beans of 960. I think it's going to be, you know, I'm not sure how we're going to get there. Is the month of August going to get us there? Or will it come, you know, closer to harvest time? I'm not quite sure. But a technical count looks at 960. But between now and then, you folks are going to see just an awful, awful basis out in the country for this old crop beans, similar to what we saw in the wheat market a year ago.
Can you tell me, you mentioned that you expected the reversal in the wheat up front just on technical basis, and what does it do to the marketplace across the grains floor?
Well, right now, you know, for the past 2 weeks, most traders in Chicago have been long wheat, short whatever else, you know, they would choose from. I think the wheat market got overbought from a technical standpoint. I know it's priced itself out of world feed circles. So, you know, I grew up with the idea high prices kill demand, low prices stimulate demand, and I think the wheat market got high enough where it just killed the demand. You look at Chicago. Now, this is where all the fund money comes from. Look at your spreads in Chicago. This is not indicative of a demand market. This is indicative of a market that's running on money. And I do think further down the road, you're going to see your Kansas City market gain on Chicago. You could even see Minneapolis gain on Chicago. But I think the last 40 cents up in this wheat market was just, fund money looking for a home.
I have the flip side of the question that you were just asked about the fringe areas. I think a million, about half of the acres in the increase come out of the five top corn-producing states in the nation. What's the possibility that actually, rather than that being trended lower, that it will be pulled higher because of that?
Well, I think it's a possibility. So far, conditions are really good in most areas. I say most areas. You go down the southeast, they're struggling. You go down into the mid-south, they were struggling prior to this week. But I can't ignore that, the prime growing areas saw good increases. And, it looms in everybody's mind. It was just a few years ago, we had a national yield of 160. And I'd hate to imagine if we can get a yield just coming near that level with all these acres. It's like, oh boy.
Matt, I'll let you respond since you're a farmer and it was your question to begin with.
Well, I've talked about this with several of my clients, and of course, corn on corn traditionally, there's been somewhat of a yield drag, but then throw in the type of hybrids that we're planting. We talked about this before the show. I'd like to think that my average yield as a farmer as well would be raised 20 to 25 bushel by the type of hybrids that I'm growing. But, even though the five states are pushing acreage, it just, common sense tells me that it's not, going to be quite as prime a condition as corn following beans. So, I agree that it's better than the fringe areas to grow it in the five major states. But I also would like to say that traditionally, it's not going to yield quite with the traditional rotation of corn following beans.
On that note, maybe we better remind everybody that USDA also reported the number of BT acres in corn at 73%. And does anybody think that that won't push up the average yield?
I think it will.
I think it could.
I think definitely.
Any final word from you, Tom, before we let you go?
Just continue to expect lots of volatility out of Chicago.
Volatility is what they've been giving us, so we'll continue to expect it. We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tom Fritz is with EFG. We'll get a final word very quick from our guest in studio. We'll start with you, Mike Georgie.
I think volatility is a word, and now that we got the acres number, we're going to listen to the weatherman again and see how things go.
Mike Georgie's with Allendale. Matt Bennett's with Bennett Grain.
I agree with Mike, and I think that if you have good comfort level with what you're growing, then go ahead and get rid of some of it at some of the higher levels that we have.
And Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing.
And know where you're at on your current position. There are still opportunities out there if you're not comfortable with the positions you have on.
And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can access this Commodity Week program and analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.